So about 6 months ago or so, when Jonathan asked me to be a guest teacher and to let him know what topic I wanted to talk about, I came up with the topic of anger. And usually when I pick topics, I pick whatever is relevant in my personal life at the moment. So I know I must have been angry about something, but I can't remember what it was. So I can't, unfortunately, tell you what that was about. But I'm happy to report that I can tell you share one story when I actually was extremely mad and angry and how I worked through it with my practice. So I'll share that with you tonight. And this was many, many years ago during a long silent meditation retreat. And we were about a week into the retreat, and our teacher had briefly lifted the silence to open it up for a question and answer session after we'd been in silence. So, you know, I was pretty raw at that point, I think, had been in silence for a week. And what happened is I asked a question about something that was confusing to me. And in retrospect, even though it wasn't my intent, I probably framed the question in a way that seemed like it was a critique of my teacher. Because what happened is she ended up not only ignoring me, but my whole question, and looking around the room and asking the entire rest of the group what confusion felt like in the body. And then she went on to the next question. So I was sitting there listening to all these yogis that I've been on retreat with talk, you know, share what confusion felt like in the body. And my question wasn't being answered. And I just could feel the anger, you know, in the silence just rising in me. I was so mad. And I didn't want to call attention to myself, though. So I just sat there and tried to stuff it, which, of course, just made it worse, right? Just trying to stuff anger makes it worse. Lama Surya Das wrote so wisely about what happens when we try to stuff our anger this way. He says, "Emotional energy, such as anger, is just like a swollen balloon. If you push it down somewhere, it bulges out somewhere else. That pressure has nowhere to go. So when we press down on or repress the anger, it makes us sick. Maybe it bulges out into our organs, gives us ulcers, migraines, headaches, hypertension, cancer, and kidney stones." That's a lot, right? From stuffing our anger. But I find this really helpful to remember, because sometimes we can do this kind of stuffing not just for an hour or a few minutes or a week, but sometimes years, don't we? Or even decades sometimes. And when this happens, anger sometimes then morphs into something else, doesn't it? Like depression or apathy or a kind of numbness. And sometimes we don't even recognizing that what we're doing is stuffing our anger. So it's actually extremely important to start becoming familiar with the energy of anger in our practice, so that when it arises, we can recognize, ah, this is anger, so that we're not stuffing it, so that we're being careful. I find it helpful to know that the root meaning of anger actually means narrow or constricted. So in a very real way, anger has a way of hardening us, if you'll notice. And it especially tends to harden our hearts, doesn't it? So the next time you recognize that you're experiencing anger, you might even ask yourself, how does my heart feel right now? How does my heart feel right now? Noticing maybe if it feels hard or closed off. In the Buddhist tradition, anger is associated with the hell realm, which is a place or state of intense pain and claustrophobia. And you might notice that whenever you're experiencing strong anger, it has this quality of claustrophobia, doesn't it? Like you're being squeezed into a tight place. I mean, your whole body gets tight when you're angry, doesn't it? So for instance, it might feel like you're having a hard time breathing. You might even feel a sense of panic. Everything feels tight, constricted. You feel like you're gonna bust out of your own skin sometimes. Doesn't that feel like anger? So during that retreat I was on, I felt exactly like that. I felt super claustrophobic and tight. My heart was hard. And so I got up and left the meditation hall. And at the time, that was probably the best and wisest thing I could do. I want to suggest that whenever we're feeling the strong energy of anger, a mindful, conscious time out is often the very wisest thing we can do. So we might physically leave the room, We might decide to take a few breaths or even a few moments or minutes of pause or longer even. We might even mindfully ask for a longer pause. Can we stop for a minute and take a breath and have a pause? You can ask for that. This is often called the sacred pause sometimes, and mindfully knowing when it's necessary can help us in many different ways. First, it can help us to calm the strong sensation that's running through our body, the physical sensation that we're experiencing, which then also helps us to clear our minds. We can see things more clearly. It also helps us get in touch with, even briefly, with our hearts so that they're not hardening. We can get in touch with our hurt, our hearts, the other person, ourselves. And it can also help us to restrain ourselves so we don't say or do anything that we're going to later regret. One of my rules for myself is don't hit the send button when my heart is still racing. You know, that's my rule, and I got to try to remember it because sometimes I do it. I think we all, anybody here do that? Who wants to admit it, right? It's like, oh, I should have waited until my heart stopped racing. You can't erase the send button, it's gone. And the same thing is true when we speak. We can't erase what we said. You know, it's going to be remembered. In the teachings, patience is one of the main antidotes to anger. So being mindful about taking this pause is extremely important. So while I was a little bit embarrassed about needing to leave the meditation hall at the retreat, I knew that I really needed that sacred pause. What I'm going to admit here was that I was even more embarrassed. What was more embarrassing was that for the next few hours, I didn't actually work on calming my anger at all. In fact, I continued to fuel the whole storyline of blame. You know, it was like, oh, how could she do that? How could she dismiss me and ignore me? Blah, 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 on and on and on in my mind. I just was keeping it going. There's a lot of pop psychology out there that tells us that, you know, if we pound our fists into the pillows or scream at the walls to work it out, that's good. You know, work it out, scream, yell, break things, you know. Yet according to the Buddhist teachings, whenever we do that, what we're in essence doing is practicing or cultivating anger. We're practicing anger when we do that. Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh says it so wisely. He says, when you express your anger, you think that you're getting anger out of your system, but that's not true. When you express your anger, either verbally or with physical violence, you are feeding the seed of anger and it becomes stronger in you. I find that really helpful to remember. As most of you know, not pouring fuel on the fire of anger is really hard, isn't it? Because while the anger is unpleasant, if we're honest, we also know that it can be extremely seductive, can't it? In an interview with Bill Moyers, Pema Chodron said that anger has a hook. Anger has a hook. She says, there's something delicious about finding fault with something, she said. Might even think of our politics right now. How many articles are you reading and going, yeah, right? But does it feel good after you read it? Maybe not so much. She says, especially when our egos are involved, which is nearly always the case, this is when it has the hook. She says, we justify it, we even feed it. The reason this kind of posturing is so seductive and hard to let go of is that we're almost always in some way defending our sense of self from some perceived threat or danger. So when you're angry, when you're feeling anger, you might even ask yourself, consider, has someone or something threatened my identity or my sense of self? Has someone or something triggered an old, unwanted identity of self? Triggers it, brings it back up, and we need to protect ourselves from that identity that we don't want anymore, okay? Has someone done something to upset the way you think things should be, or how you think other people or that person should be? Sometimes we can get stuck in a cycle of, well, he should have, or she should have, or they should have, or I should have. And I think I've said this in here before, but whenever you catch a should, it's toxic, isn't it? It's the don't should all over yourself, part of that should part thing. So essentially, anger is what we habitually experience whenever there seems to be a gap between what is and how we want it to be. According to the Buddhist teachings, of course, this is the classic way that we suffer. We want it to be different than it actually is. To paraphrase the teacher Adyashanti, whenever we battle with reality, we suffer. It's a paraphrase. I'm not sure he said it exactly that way, but it's true. So on that retreat, I was definitely seduced by the protection of anger, mostly because I wasn't ready to feel or face what was really hiding underneath it, which is so often the case if you really check out anger. Anger is protecting something that you don't want to work with or feel. So that evening, during one of the longer meditation sessions, I realized that I was just totally exhausted with the battle, with my story, with protecting myself. I could see that I was protecting an injured sense of self and my hurt and pain. And just this recognition, being tired of the battle, helped me to let go a little bit of the armoring that I'd created and finally let me just experience what was underneath it. If you think of anger, it's like you're putting on a suit of armor, literally, and you just take the vest off, and what's underneath the vest is ouch, isn't it? Usually when you chuck it out in some way. So when we do this, when we can take the armoring off, we're exposed to ourselves and maybe others. So the very first thing that we apply immediately in the practice is kindness and compassion. We are with ourselves, and our anger, the way a friend might be with us if they see we're in pain. I'm right here with you. I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here. So for instance, when I first allowed myself to recognize and feel the ouch of what was happening, I immediately brought up a phrase that I learned from teacher Sylvia Borsting, which I absolutely love, and I have it on a sticky note, and I'm going to advise all of you to have a sticky note because it's such a great quote, phrase. It's so simple. It's, sweetie, you're in pain. That's it. Isn't that great? I love it because it's like, it's friendly, allowing, and recognition, all in one. It's like, tidy. Mm-hmm. Sweetie, you're in pain. So, you know, we do this, we acknowledge and recognize the pain with great friendliness, loving kindness, metta practice. So besides patience, metta, loving kindness practice, is the other main antidote to anger. And we can practice offering this to ourselves, and we can also practice offering it to the other person or the people involved as much as possible, recognizing that we all suffer. We all suffer and we all want to be happy. Okay? It's a practice, because a lot of times we don't want to send loving kindness to the person that we're mad at, right? Think of some of the politicians out there that you might not want to be kind to. Everybody else, but not that person, right? I really want to emphasize here, though, that we don't start with offering kindness for the person or situation that we're angry with. That's not where we start. Sometimes in our attempt to be nice or forgiving, spiritual people, we can sometimes do this before we're ready, and what it does is it serves to cover over the pain we're experiencing, and it can be just another kind of stuffing, which, as we know, can cause a lot of harm. So be cautious about that. Am I forgiving too soon? Because it's another way of covering over, actually. So the first thing we do is offer this friendliness and kindness to ourselves, just like a parent puts, you know, in the airplanes, they say, put the oxygen mask on yourself first. It's that old thing. So you bring kindness to yourself first, so that you're then better able at some point to offer kindness to the other person or the situation. Another phrase that we can use is, I care about this suffering, which means this is not my suffering, it's the suffering. Because when we're angry, we're constricted around a sense of self, it becomes very personal and very boxed in and constricted. So it can help to say, I care about this suffering. Knowing, you know, this is what anger feels like. This is what hurt feels like. I'm not alone in this. Whenever we can do this, it can help us loosen our grasp on anger, soften our hearts a bit, and help us feel more connected, keep us from feeling separate, because the feeling of being separate is actually the source of our bigger suffering, isn't it? If you think about it. So, you know, whenever you're experiencing anger, whenever you can sense I'm experiencing anger, you might take a moment to notice if you feel any way disconnected or separate. Just check it out. How am I feeling separate right now when I'm feeling angry? And ask yourself how you feel disconnected. How am I feeling disconnected? It's a great inquiry. It can maybe tell you a lot of things if you listen to the answer to that. Another phrase that's helpful that we can recognize when we can recognize our hurt and anger is, may this suffering serve awakening. I love that one. That one's kind of like my last resort one. I really don't want to use the other ones. May this damn suffering serve awakening, you know, in some way. Which means to me, may I not run away from this? May I not run away from this or stuff it or hide or flee or fight? May I not do that? May I be willing to stand in this and look at it, be with it and learn from it? Sort of an addendum to that is, may my future words and actions come from my wise and kind heart so that it may serve awakening. You know? May I use my wise and kind heart to deal with this issue? What would the Buddha do in this particular instance? Or what would love do in this instance? So the first few steps whenever we're experiencing anger then, or even any of the other emotions, you know, anger, sadness, grief, all of them, is to first recognize that you're experiencing the hurt and the pain. Give yourself that. Allow it to be there. And then offer yourself kindness for feeling it in the first place instead of making you or it wrong. Just like all the other emotions, it is not at all wrong that we experience anger. You know, so often, especially in spiritual communities, anger is a hard one because, you know, we tend to run away from it, judge it, reject it, suppress it as somehow unspiritual or wrong, right? So we might, for instance, think, gosh, I must not be as enlightened as I think I am because here I am feeling this anger. I must not be a nice or kind person because I'm feeling this anger. You might even tag an identity of mean, I'm mean, or I'm selfish, or another kind of negative label on anger. I mean, just consider that just for a moment in yourself. How do you label yourself when you're angry? Does a label come up? Just check that out. You know, what is it that you feel when you're angry? Some people feel righteous anger. I feel powerful when I'm angry. Other people have different labels on there. And guess what? All of them are just labels or identities. They're not true. Sometimes we might even be afraid of our anger. You know, like we might be afraid that if we allow ourselves to feel it, it's going to spiral out of control and we're just going to be completely enraged if we allow ourselves to even feel it, so we stuff it or it morphs into something different. We might be afraid that if we feel our anger, we're going to be punished somehow. So what happens when that we have that feeling is we end up punishing ourselves instead to save others the trouble of doing it for us. We do it unconsciously. And what does that do? It turns it on inside. We put it inside. We turn the anger towards ourselves, which then, of course, turns into depression, right? The Dalai Lama was once asked by a reporter if he ever felt angry or outraged, and His Holiness laughed and said, "Yes, of course, I'm a human being. Generally speaking, if a human being never shows anger, then I think something's wrong. He's not right in the brain." Yeah? And I love that because it makes me just feel better to help that His Holiness gets angry and it's okay. I think so many of us tend to judge ourselves for feeling our very human emotions, and we tend to make whatever we're feeling wrong, and in doing so, we also then tend to identify with our feelings and end up making ourselves wrong. So the strong, powerful energy of anger actually can be super healthy, very healthy, because it can show us where we're stuck a lot of the time. And it also helps to show us that something's not right. Something's not right here. And maybe wise action needs to be taken. Okay? So when we're stuffing our anger, not allowing ourselves or judging it, we're going to miss out on that transformative power of anger that has messages to tell us. It's actually a necessary energy, a powerful messenger that needs to be completely embraced, heard, and felt whenever it arises. As an example, while I was on my retreat, to get back to that, and I was sitting in meditation, allowing myself to open to the ouch, the hurt, offering myself kindness, I also, in the same breath, reminded myself that I was simply experiencing the energy of anger. I was just simply experiencing it. I didn't need to identify with it. You know, we don't need to hook into these belief systems like, you know, I'm an angry person, or a mean person, or I'm a sensitive person because I'm so angry. You know, we put these labels on ourselves. It's simply the energy of anger passing through us. Like all the other emotions, anger always manifests or arises out of what are called causes and conditions. And, you know, something happens, somebody does something, somebody says something, and then we create a story or belief around it based on all our past conditioning. This includes everything we've experienced in our lives, the way we were brought up, all our experiences, accidents, everything our family and culture has told us, all of it, all those things that we believe are true. We just automatically believe are true, and we're not questioning our beliefs. Okay? This is not to say that people don't do things that are hurtful or unkind, or that there are situations that can seem extremely wrong to us and cause us to experience anger, of course. It's that we tend to make the pain of it so much worse by how we're relating and responding to it, depending on what we happen to be believing about the person or the situation or about ourselves. We make it so much worse. A classic story that points to this is about how the Buddha responded to a man who approached him one day in a village and started just yelling at him and insulting the Buddha. And the man said, "You have no right teaching others. You're as stupid as everyone else. You're nothing but a fake," to the Buddha. The Buddha remained really calm and patient in the face of these insults. And he asked the man, "Tell me, if you buy a gift for someone and that person doesn't take it, to whom does the gift belong?" And the man was surprised by the Buddha's question, said, "It would belong to me, of course." And the Buddha smiled and said, "It's exactly the same with your anger. If you become angry with me and I do not get insulted, then the anger falls back on you. You are then the only one who becomes unhappy, not me. All you've done is to hurt yourself." I love that story. Another way the Buddha explained this idea was by saying, holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone else. You are the one who gets burned. And that's a pretty famous quote, so I'm sure most of you have heard that one. But I love that one because it reminds me that, you know, whenever we can notice that we're being burned in a way by our own anger, we need to be willing to drop whatever storyline we've been gripping so tightly. And remember that the storyline that we're gripping is what is causing us the anger. It's causing the pain to be so much worse. When we can drop the narrative and get in touch with the direct experience of our anger, we can then start to listen to what our bodies are telling us, and again, start to become really familiar with the energy of anger. What does anger feel like in the body? So for instance, during my retreat, after I decided to drop the story, take off the armor and kind of feel what's underneath here and get curious about it, what was happening in my body was that I could feel shaking in my limbs. My limbs were kind of shaky. There was a kind of like rumbling, like a volcano in my body. I mean, I was not just anger. I think I was at that point kind of enraged. A sense of heat, rapid pounding in my heart. Felt like steam was coming out of my ears, you know? My jaw and my fists were clenched. You might notice when you're angry, you do that, you tighten. And there was like a tightness in my tummy as well. So I had dropped the story though and gone directly to the physical sensations and just stayed curious with that. And what was happening is as I continued to breathe and be curious about it, just a fantastic thing happened and I couldn't escape. Pema Chodron talks about, you know, the wisdom of no escape. I was in the meditation hall, so I couldn't do anything. I just had to be there with it. And it was kind of fantastic because it got bigger and bigger and bigger, like a balloon swelling. And this powerful energy of heat and just a rush went through my head and my feet and my arms, like a whoo. It was like literally like the balloon popped. It was an explosion of energy. And when it popped, everything sort of deflated. It was so fascinating. Oh, like a deflated balloon. It felt so good, actually, that I was like, wow, can we do that again? You know? And I could breathe easier after that. It just left me. It left my body, and I felt kind of exhausted. And I realized that the heat of anger had been just like a water boiling. It was like clouding and steaming and obstructing the clarity of my mind and my thinking. And so I could suddenly sense or start to look at what I was believing that was creating the sensations of anger in the body in the first place. So I started to actually ask myself some gentle inquiries because at that point my body was calmer and I could do that. And these are questions you can ask yourself when you feel angry, very gentle. What am I really afraid of here? What am I really afraid of? What am I defending? What sense of self am I defending? Where do I hurt? And how am I hurting? How am I hurting? So as I asked myself these questions, I started to recognize, to be honest, that I was relating to my teacher just like I'd related to my father as a child. My father was a very sensitive man and was really sensitive to anything that sounded like a critique of him in any way. And when he sensed that I had critiqued him in some way, he would give me the silent treatment, sometimes for days. Has anybody ever had that, the silent treatment? It's painful. And I was a child, so it was even more painful. You know, what's wrong with me? Why is he mad at me? I shouldn't have done that. So I realized in large part I was reacting to my teacher because of very old, deep conditioning. And I recognized that the strong energy of his anger was just serving to cover an old, deep wound, which is so often the case when we're angry, when we're hooked, like Pema Chodron said. We've got that hook in us. There's something underneath there that's old and it's deep, and we need to look at it and be kind to it. So when I could recognize this, I could then offer myself even more compassion. And then afterwards, I not only apologized to my teacher, but I gave her a hug, which helped her because she could sense that I was angry with her. And she actually ended up apologizing too, to me. And we had this wonderful heart connection. And I felt even closer to her because we had recognized our mutual conditioning, if you will, right? And I'd stopped feeling separate from her. I'd stopped hardening my heart. And we just felt more connected, and that was really nice. So again, it wasn't that my teacher hadn't acted unskillfully. She admitted that she had. She was tired, she had a migraine, she was irritated with me. But I'd made what happened so much more painful because what I was believing due to my old conditioning, and I was projecting all of that onto her. So if you will, I'd agreed to accept the gift she'd given me, I'd accepted the gift. And I had created a belief about her and myself, again, based on old conditioning. I want to be clear here and say that learning to be kind and patient with our anger does not mean we never try to change something that doesn't seem to be working in our lives or in the world. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. It's not about giving up in resignation or despair, letting people off the hook for acting in ways that are harmful. Okay? It's about learning to be brutally honest and truthful about ourselves, about how we might be burning ourselves in the process, if you will, by how we're relating to whatever's happening and what we're believing about it. Sometimes for my longer meditation workshops, I offer students a magnet that has a quote on it from Carl Rogers. And the quote is, "The curious paradox is that when I can accept myself just as I am, then I can change." The curious paradox is that when I can accept myself just as I am, then I can change. And I'd like to suggest that you might change this quote a little bit and add other people, the situation, in place of I. So it would look like this: when I can accept others just as they are, only then is there the possibility of change. When I can accept the situation just as it is, only then is there a possibility of change. Clearly, knowing that this change might not ever be in the other person or the situation, but the real change might be in ourselves. And that's really where it is. We always think that the anger, if only they would, if only he would, the situation, and really that's not going to change. The way that we work with our anger is working right in here. So I think what I'd like to do now, if you're up for joining me, is just a brief inquiry, a little meditation practice into anger. I'm going to invite you just to come into a nice seated posture. And just taking a nice deep breath in, deep breath out. Settling in some way the mind, heart, body. And if you'd like during this practice, I'm also going to invite those of you who would like to just place a hand on the heart, maybe a hand on the belly, and just sense the body breathing into the hands. I'd like to invite you to just think of some situation in your life right now, maybe some person or situation that brings up maybe some strong anger in you, something that you feel angry about and you can recognize as anger. And really, notice what you're believing and let it be just as big as it wants to. No fixing, changing, just listening to the words, the thoughts, beliefs, and going right to the body and seeing how this manifests in the body. As you're paying attention, I'd like to invite you to go right directly to the heart. And notice what's happening in the heart. If there's a sense of hardening or protecting, no judging, just notice, how is my heart when I consider this person or situation? And maybe ask your heart, go right to the heart, and be honest with yourself and ask yourself, what am I really afraid of here? Just listen to what your heart has to tell you. What am I really afraid of? What am I defending? Maybe what sense of self am I defending? What identity do I feel I need to defend, or an identity that I don't want, that I'm trying to protect myself from feeling? You might even ask yourself, where am I hurting? How am I hurting? What's the most painful part of this? Feeling any sensations that might be moving through the heart. Seeing if you can bring a sense of kindness, compassion to yourself, maybe using Sylvia Boorstein's phrase, sweetie, you are in pain. See how that lands. Or some version. What happens if you tell yourself, I care about this suffering? Noticing what happens in the heart. I care about this suffering. What happens if you consider the phrase, may my future words and actions come from my wise and kind heart. May it serve awakening. How might the Buddha or love handle this particular situation? Just consider. Continuing with a willingness to stay with whatever emotion might be running through the heart, whether it's still anger, maybe sadness, some pain, hurt. Seeing if you can be willing to stay with kindness. Maybe making the intention now, planting the seed of, may I be willing to listen to my, continue to listen to my heart. May it serve me well. May I hear the messages that this anger is trying to tell me. May I honor my anger and let it be so that I can hear what it's trying to tell me. And finally, with the eyes still closed, just listening to this poem by Billy Collins, who so exemplifies the idea that what we're believing creates more suffering, how we're thinking about something creates more suffering. And the poem is called Another Reason Why I Don't Keep a Gun in the House. He writes, "The neighbor's dog will not stop barking. He is barking the same high rhythmic bark that he barks every time they leave the house. They must switch him on their way out. The neighbor's dog will not stop barking. I close all the windows in the house and put on a Beethoven symphony full blast, but I can still hear him muffled under the music, barking, barking, barking. And now I can see him sitting in the orchestra, his head raised confidently as if Beethoven had included a part for barking dog. When the record finally ends, he is still barking, sitting there in the oboe section, barking, his eyes fixed on the conductor who is entreating him with his baton while the other musicians listen in respectful silence to the famous barking dog solo, that endless coda that first established Beethoven as an innovative genius."